testing. But you know, because it's not very that, you know, we can have a lot of fun. Like we can actually say that we talk and then we don't care. Welcome to our panel, A Thirst Unquenched, sexy characters for the rest of us. And I've had several people ask, like, what do you mean by the rest of us? And it's because a lot of panels and discourse and discussions have tended to assume that focus on only one kind of sexy character and assume that only, you know, one type of, shall we say, horny gamer. This is not a panel about that at all. This is a panel about celebrating the types of characters that we find attractive. The fact that there are lots of diverse gamers and that we're all horny as fuck. And the discussion of what we find sexy. So, thank you all for coming to go on this amazing journey. I will introduce myself and the panel. My name is Michelle Clough. I'm a writer and narrative designer with the writing company Tailspinners. I'm also the co-chair of the Romance and Sexuality Special Interest Group, which is a group of four game developers who are interested in creating games with romance, sex, sex appeal, and other cool content. And I've done a lot of lectures at GDC and at PAX about things like sex scenes and sex appeal and sexy male characters. So I have a brand, and I'm sticking to it, and here I am. For my wonderful panelists to introduce themselves.
Hello, everyone.
I'm Jen. I am a game writer at Pixelberry Studios. We make this app called Choices. It is a library of online, of interactive fiction novels that you can play and have fun with. I've also worked on 2064 Reeling Memories as a writer. I have worked on Unavowed and Shardlight.
Hi, my name is Arden. I'm making a game right now called Date or Die. It's coming out next year. It's a weird horror romance thing. This year at PAX, I helped put together the visual novel reading room, which showcases just a lot of queer dating sims made by like other queer developers.
Hey, my name is Tanya.
I just want to know where that is.
Yes.
But I haven't seen it. Where?
It is in the Indie Bay booth.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank
Please
you.
Come check us out.
My name is Tanya. So I did start at Universe Games. I talked about that earlier. But tonight I'm talking about all my thirst, basically, of getting Emery's voice, this character, I'm thirsty for them. And when I'm not running Universe Games, I'm a partner Twitch streamer. I'm also on a show called Rivals of Waterdeep on the WotC Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/dnd. And I'm the co-developer on the RPG based off N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy. Nice.
Hi, I'm Suha Alsamkiri. I'm Suha Alsamkiri. I am a former litigator. I'm still an attorney, I guess. I'm now in-house counsel and vice president for our indie studio, Turn Pixel. I've just put out a visual novel called Akash, Path of Fly. It is the visual novel I wanted to make because I was not getting enough thirst content in the ones that I was playing, so just FYI there. I write, direct, and do pretty much everything else that needs done at our studio.
And you help me run the romance and sexuality group.
Yeah, that's also a thing that I do. I think we're calling you maybe a coach.
Co-chair.
Yeah.
Awesome person.
I'm Matt Baum. I do a lot of stuff on the internet. I have some YouTube series, some podcasts. I write for a variety of online outlets, particularly about sexual subcultures. And my other big project is Queens of Adventure. It's a podcast featuring drag queens playing Dungeons & Dragons. And if you'd like, I have cards up here with drag-themed magic items that you can use in your campaigns if you come up and grab those.
So the general idea was to have a nice balance between a sort of a general overview discussion, talking about like deep, insightful commentary about, you know, where this is in the industry and what makes a character sexy, balancing that out with, you know, just sheer full-on an excuse for us to squee about our favorite characters because they're really, really hot and we really really like to talk about them. So getting the correct balance of this is going to be potentially awkward because obviously, you know, people have come for different reasons. That's what we're going to attempt to do. So we're going to start off with everybody has come with a sort of a visual list, if you were, of their favorite characters. They're going to talk a bit about their types, and they're going to talk about one or two specific characters that mean a lot to them and why they're important to them. And after we do all that, then we'll get into the more general sort of question-ish types of things. I will just shut up now and let the next panelist go. Okay. All right, Arden, you have a very interesting selection of characters.
Okay. Very revealing. Very fast.
My type is dirtbags.
I love people who suck. People who would have shoved me into a locker in high school, that sort of thing. My ideal fantasy is like, wow, what if a really aggressive, scary person posed no real danger to me because they're fake? I mean, like, that's that. There you go. Yeah, and that's the thing is that you look at this list that even Cole, who everyone's like, oh, he's so sweet. I'm like, he killed a lot of people. And that's So, yeah, that's my general shape that I would love to talk about him itself from Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers. And do not worry, I will not be spoiling it in case you have not finished
Shadowbringers.
Thank you. You're so welcome. It's very good. I would not want to ruin that for anybody. But then if you pick this, I just saw it right now. It's correct. I won't say you're wrong. So when I was thinking about who I should talk about for this panel, I was like, well, I could talk about Sheik from Zelda because I'm trans. But then I was like, well, every trans person looks at Sheik and they're like, yep. Like, like both sides of the spectrum, we're all just like, yeah, all right, I get it. And so that's like less relevant to me as an adult now who's like been transitioning for a while, and like I've kind of moved past that moment of like, whoa, this pretty androgynous person, what if I could be like that? And like, no, I'm that. Like I'm going to that and living my life now. So it's kind of a weird experience to go from being like a straight woman to a gay man, even though not really any of those things. It's, don't worry about it, it's a mess. And and it's sort of a feeling where you kind of like watch in real time the number of people who might be attracted to you dwindle, because it's like, you know, conventionally hot girl versus like trans gay boyish, I don't know, it's up there, like sort of thing. And clearly, like, I have a thing for very beautiful villains, as you've all noticed immediately. but it's like, I have a thing for them, but the thing that really makes a character stick with me is if I sincerely believe that they could like fall for someone like me too. Like if there's queerness involved in their story, if they're like queer themselves, like that means a lot to me. Because it's like, Xenos is really hot. Like Xenos from Stormblood is so sexy and beautiful. And I want him to like put his sword under the blade, like under the hilt of my chin and tilt it up, but like I have peach fuzz and I don't think he's into that. Like he's wrong, but it is what it is. But Emmett Selk would do that for me. And that is I've been trying to figure out like how to word this for several weeks so that every straight person in the audience can just cover their ears really quick, because Emmett Selk looks gay. Like you can't say that, but I can say that. Like, look at his threaded eyebrows, his beautiful eyeshadow. Visibly, like he looks like a Disney villain that would have given me a complex as a child. there's this beautiful gesture he does in his first introductory cutscene where as he's walking away, he just like does this little wave with the hand, and I was like just struck instantly. But he speaks and acts like actual queer people I know in real life, and his whole arc is about like he feels very displaced from his community, and he's trying so hard to like integrate with other people, and it's just like not working. And it's really relatable. Like when I love that he doesn't look like, even among Final Fantasy, you know, boys, where eyeshadow is like you get a mandatory eyeshadow palette when you sign up to be a boy in Final Fantasy. But he still looks like visibly he does not look like most other characters in that series, and I really appreciate that about him, because like when I first started medically transitioning, I was like, well, if I put on my eyeshadow today, like, my doctor's gonna come to my house and take my testosterone prescription away from me. Like, that's, like this really weird sort of, like, binary thing of, well, I can't be, like, too much of a girl because then I'm fake, and that's not how it works, but it's very hard to, like, train yourself out of that. So it was, like, amazing for me to see a character like Emmett Selick who is so weird and so, like, confident in his weirdness and, like, does not really feel a need to apologize to anyone or clarify like why he is that way. It's just like, he's really good, I don't care, and has clearly like a fondness for people who are you know, like marginalized, and he's really like, he's really compelling. Play Final Fantasy 14. but yeah, it was really, really powerful as an adult to see a character who was like, defying sort of like gender looks and stereotypes without being a joke, and who is like genuinely one of the best characters in an RPG I've seen. So yeah, I just love him. Also, he's beautiful. That's, you know, I'm shallow.
That's okay. We're here.
We're all shallow together.
Yeah. Funny you should be the one to say that, Jen.
Sorry.
So Jen, walk us through this.
Yes, so my type, if you're not clear, is who wants to solve uncontrollably? Great, all of you! So I have a few different like facets to like things I end up attracted to. One is like the dark, tortured soul who like really like is a good person inside. Through interacting with you, they become better and then also add in like a good layer of like, hey, we should like support the marginalized and like fucking revolution and shit, and that's always a great fantasy to live out in today. And I figured out last year I'm bi. From Mass Effect 2 and 3. He is an assassin you bring onto your crew who is going to die within the year but wants to use the time he has left to right the wrongs he has done. And he's really fucking hot! Guillermo del Toro, creator of The Shape of Water, that sexy alien, the lady fucks The Shape of Water, was based on him! That's a true fact! I love Fang for a number of reasons. He's an emotionally vulnerable man who acknowledges when he is fucked up, who cares about doing the right thing, who holds himself accountable, who is open with his emotions and doesn't stigmatize how he expresses them, either about his life and his traumas or about you. And I'm going to talk more about this in a second, but I actually want to just show it. Here's a clip of one of the last things he says to you the night before he thinks you're all gonna die in a suicide mission.
You helped me achieve more than I thought possible. We've righted many wrongs. I've spoken to my son. I should be at peace on the eve of battle.
Stop. Don't give me a speech.
I'm ashamed.
Shame.
And it shames me.
Woo!
personally, as I was preparing for this talk, I was mostly preparing to be like, be masochistic and love people who are gonna die after redeeming themselves and cry really hard when they do it. But as I was like rewatching cutscenes to like reformulate my thoughts for this, so Fain is going to die from an illness, right, within a year. I was diagnosed with chronic illness a couple of years ago now. I'm not gonna die, so don't, yeah. So I don't relate that hard to it. But I think there's a lot of times as a chronically ill person that you feel like because your body is broken, that because it takes so many more people to keep you alive than other people, that you feel like your life is not as worthy of love as others. And but like playing Fane, like, or watching Shepard love Fane so unconditionally, like, it helped me process that, like, I can also be deserving of that. And oh god, I'm so sorry.
That voice though.
Oh my god, his voice.
Yes.
Oh my god, his voice.
Well, thank you.
So hi!
So that was great, but now I've messed up the slide deck. Now we're back on the slide deck. Hooray! Okay, you're getting there next.
I'm so sorry!
You're also girl.
Does anyone have a tissue?
No. We're good.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Alright, Tanya. Take it away.
Oh my god!
And actually, I think I accidentally deleted one. That's why I just thought about it, but I apologize.
Did it!
I kind of, well, Michelle's like, so, crushes. And I was like, how much room do I have?
All of the room.
That's really, really fucking impressive that you got that thing on there.
I have more!
Some of those are my screenshots, too. Don't judge me.
You're among friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
I'm supposed to talk now. Clearly, I have kind of a tag with their Mass Effect Dragon Age character because we joked before coming in here because I actually have a Fenris emote on my Twitch channel. And depending on how questions go, if we get to Q&A, I may give you a Fenris sticker. But he is like my biggest crush on here because I'm a big fucking nerd. Bull because yes please, consent is sexy. And I know people don't like Alexios as much as Cassandra in the new Assassin's Creed, but I'm sorry, once I figured out I could transmog his armor into basically having him walk around more or less naked and oily, that was right? So my friend Brian has been playing Assassin's Creed, and I don't care what armor he gets, Alexios is running around the Olympic basically thong or whatever the fuck it is, and oily, because you can pick oily or not oily. But again, anyone voiced by Kenny Emery is fair game.
Brings me to your first you wanted to feature.
Yes, so what's funny is I like Balthier for voice and aesthetic. But I'm actually really bad at Final Fantasy XII. I bought this game on the original PS2, and again on the PS4, and I keep getting stuck in the same fucking boat. But it means I get to hear Ball here.
I have a sample of what he sounds like. Yes. Let me share it.
Quite a performance. You have something that belongs to me. Who are you? I play the leading man. Who else?
I have whiskey upstairs. But yes, Baldur and Fenris, same voice actor, Gideon Emery. One thing people, if I ever get to meet Gideon Emery, I may forget that I'm an adult and how to talk. But I've always liked Fenris, so I can talk more authoritatively about Fenris, since I've actually finished Dragon Age far too many times to admit in public. But I like Fenris because, one, he is trying to figure out himself, and he really just, as much as I hate the healing cock trope, whether...
What?
It's what, 10 o'clock at night? I am zero filter, y'all. You know, like when you romance Fenris with a male hawk, it's basically like, we slept together, and now you pine for this dick for 3 years. And now you come back, and everything's great. And, you know, he is growing, he is becoming a free person. And, you know, what I've always loved about Dragon Age 2, regardless of thirst, is that the NPCs have a life outside of Pong. That they go and they do stuff, and, you know, Fenris, if you don't date him, and you don't date Isabella, they get together. Same with Dorian and Bull. And so what I've liked is he goes and becomes a whole person, eventually. And you can actually reason with him at the end and get him to turn back to your side, depending on your choices. If you make bad choices and he dies, I hate you. But I watched friends finish Final Fantasy XII, and it's just kind of, Baldur's just kind of cool. And, you know, hearing that voice of a beloved older character just makes me super happy and super thirsty. But Fenris is my buddy. I don't know if you can see my phone case, but I've got Fenris on my phone case. And, you know, God, now I'm getting emotional too, thanks.
Sorry! I'm so sorry.
No,
it's the side of the table that cries.
Yes.
No, we're going to go to the other side of the table.
Yeah. Not quite yet, but, you know, overall, you know, thirst aside, because, you know, Fenris, part of him going back to Hawk, no matter which Hawk that you romance, when he comes back over 3 years, he wants that relationship. And he wants to be with Hawk and sticks with Hawk to the bitter end. And so that growth is part of what makes him, like, thirst-worthy for me. You know, voice and the fact that he can rip parts out, you know, that's just a bonus.
Awesome. I agree with all of you. All right. So our next panelist. Walk us through.
Yeah. That one was a real weird outlier for me because, like, I feel like he's a very good example of just good design because I'm not into shark men in any way, shape, or form normally. But I just feel like he transcends all of that stuff. But so basically, my two types are either big or goofy. And sometimes big and goofy merges into like lovable asshole, but unfortunately I don't find as many of those in games as I would like. And so I feel like Cloud is probably the biggest outlier because he's super angsty, which is not my deal. But I think that they generally tend to go kind of Alistair type, who is, you know, forever husband. Or just gigantic, like 7 foot tall, huge, etc. So I'm going to focus more on Gladwood. FYI, Zell is from when I was like 12, because he's like 17 and I don't know. So I just want to clarify that was age appropriate back then. So, I'm going to focus on Gladio because he was kind of the most significant for me. First of all, when I booted up Final Fantasy XV, and the thing starts with them pushing a car in the desert, and, you know, he walks around like that all the time. Like, he just has it out. It's a community service, honestly. But, like, he's pushing the car, his muscles are bulging, he's wearing leather pants. I mean, he really felt like kind of a thirsty gift. And I think I got to about chapter 3, and I just ran to Tumblr, like, I have to write fan fiction. For like a year. I think it took me like 6 months to actually beat it, because I wrote so much. It was really So my thing is actually not necessarily about Gladio himself as much as what happened after I got like super into him, but I spent like a year, maybe a year and a half to 2 years, just writing all the time. And I was a really loud part of that community. But, you know, I was raised pretty conservative. But online, you can be anonymous, you can be yourself, you can be extremely loud. And so I found a lot of like-minded people who were also loud and thirsty. So being able to, like, explore that part of myself I made a lot of friends, but I also discovered that, hey, I really like this, I like romance. And so I ended up making like friends, but I also had like professional contacts that I met through Final Fantasy fandom. I hired two of them to work on my game, and eventually I got Ray Chase to be in my game. So if any of you like Ray Chase's voice, pick up Akash Path of the Five on PSN now. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, kind of being able to be my truest self, I felt like helped my career in a tangible way. So Gladio will always be special to me, as will the game, because that was where I kind of really came into my own, you know, even so late in the game. So that was very nice for me. Yeah,
awesome. Well, to keep things moving, you did have one other. We do have to keep it short, but I will be very quick.
Essentially, Janway is here because he falls into the him big category, but this was a significant moment for me when I was in high school because I gathered my little girlfriends together. This was Dead or Alive 3, his ending movie, and I was like, okay, you guys watch this, and I showed it to them, and I'll tell you what happened after we did this. This was a significant part. So I showed it to them, I queued it up, and I was prepared to receive their, you know, adulation. And all of them in unison went, ew, because it turned out all of my friends were really into super skinny guys. And that was like a big eye-opening, wow, like we don't all like the same things at all kind of moment. So that is a lesson I still carry with me into my career now. So I just wanted to share that one. Wonderful Zoom in with all of you.
Thank you for sharing with the class.
All right, Matt.
Fascinating.
Let's talk about some of these guys. So basically, confidence. Characters who are uninhibited and who are into their thing and don't care what anybody thinks. That's basically my thing. So I've done a lot of writing for a lot of different outlets, The Stranger, and The Advocate, and Here, and Into, when that existed, about sexual subcultures, and I'm just fascinated by people who are trying something new, or people who are like, hey, I might have discovered a new way to have fun with these weird meat sacks that we live in. So, and so a lot of times here, I guess, like, the thing for me is I spend so much time in my head, and I'm so, like, you know, like, I think a lot of nerds and introvert and constantly, like, second-guessing myself and all that kind of stuff. So I really am into the characters who are either at one end of an extreme or another. Like, basically, their alignments are at the far corners of the alignment charts, who are like, no, I'm very much whatever I am. So, like, you've got the bad guys, the Bowsers, like the him big type, I think. and you've got the, you know, I'm very into like the good guys who are like very, very good and very pure. I guess the contrast of those things. Like, I don't actually want to, be the bad guy in real life, but when I'm, you know, for example, playing Mario Kart, I will always pick Bowser because I'm like, yes, okay, like, not because I'm like, the weight of the cart and I like how it handles, but also because I'm like, I just want to be Bowser for the next like 2.5 minutes and feel power for just a little while.
Please tell me about the one that you picked as your focus.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about
your first focus.
Let's talk about specifically, like, Kirby the character is like a little sphere, and so, okay, that's just who he is. But human Kirby, let's talk about human Kirby.
Let's talk about human Kirby.
Okay, so. Generous oral bottom. Uninhibited hedonist with insatiable appetite. And possessed of an empathy that, to the degree that he can become like those around him. So these are all the qualities that I'm like, okay, yes, you are good. I want a man like this in my life. Also, I feel like he's very more positive, and I'm like, okay, that sounds good too. No, that's good. And then we've got my precious Hubert. Non-romanceable for now, but that's okay. because I consider him romanceable. There's this phenomenon, I think we talked about a little bit, of like the villain being somehow like mysteriously alluring. And if you play, you know, no spoilers, Fire Emblem, Hubert has this, he's very protective and also very sinister and very creepy. Which I don't know, for some reason that really is, I find exciting and alluring. I think, you know, in part what's going on with Hubert is, again, that confidence, and also, like so many of those other characters who are on my other slide, he's not a character who thinks twice about things. He really knows what's going on, he really knows how he feels, he's very confident, very self-assured, and there's no delay of like, well, let's really think this through. No, let's just do what we're doing, is basically his approach. There's a, I don't know how many people are familiar with like the old D&D modules, but there's this one called Against the Cult of the Reptile God. I don't know, yeah, it's like 1978. but there's one character in there, an NPC named like Melius the Wise or something. He is described as a wizard hermit who lives outside of town, and he's got this long beard, and he doesn't like to talk to people, and he's got a weasel for a pet. And I'm like, oh, this is like checking all of my boxes. Like the creepy misanthrope who's only friends with animals. So, you know, what I like about the villains, and what I find villains sexy, is it's, you know, obviously bad to be bad in life, in actual life. But it's also very exciting to be confident. And who is more confident than the bad guys and stuff? So it is fun to have that time with them, to be like, we're going to try something real different by being just like outwardly villainous. And I'm not saying like Hubert is outwardly villainous exactly, but you know, he's got those narrow squinty eyes, you know what that means?
He does what needs to get done.
Yes. So you can, you know, have your little fantasy and then like go back to real life and be like, okay, but in real life we're really good.
Behind on time, I have to abuse my position as panelist, and I want to talk about my favorite character a little bit, because I also definitely have a tie, some of which you'll see.
Organization!
Yeah. I'm very thirsty. And while there are a few exceptions there, my type universally seems to be beautiful, elegant disaster men. Bonus points for black leather, long or silver hair, being a villain, having anger management issues, being an elf, and generally making poor life decisions. And while I could go on at length for our boy Fenris there, or the fact that Illidan is a beautiful trash fire who just makes World of Warcraft an absolute delight, there's one person, there's one character who started it all, the OG. Oops.
Yeah.
For 20 years. I'm waiting for the bit where I'm supposed to grow up and get over it. It has not come yet. It never will. I will attempt to be G-rated with my feelings, because most of them are extremely sweaty and inappropriate. But I feel like Sephiroth, more than any male character I saw before him, was designed to be completely, openly sexual and sensual. Everything about him is coded that way. The leather he wears, the little bondage-like harness, the voice they get from him, the way he speaks, every interaction with every other character, he is there to hate fuck everybody. He balances badassery and grace, which is something I think is really appealing to me on a sexy level. That he's got that kind of like, yes, he's a badass, but he's very elegant. He's got like these beautiful, refined features. He's got the sort of slightly androgynous look going. And on top of it, like, yes, he's a villain, but it's all like tied in with this like deep, angsty backstory about where he just wants a mother who loves him, and oh my god, I want to give him a hug, and that would get me killed. So yeah, I have a type that basically, you know, that I should be staying away from on Twitter for the but I want to actually talk about again, like, why he's important to me, because Final Fantasy VII came out when I was a teenager, and that was a difficult time to
be the only girl in your school who liked video games, because at that point, you know, I'm marinating in like self-esteem issues and hormones and all that great stuff. None of the girls I know play video games. And all of the advertising at the time for things like Tomb Raider, things like that, it was very much like, boys play games, boys play the games. And I started to get this kind of complex about like feeling like, well, maybe I'm weird for liking video games. Maybe, like, I've been playing them for so many years, but maybe I'm not supposed to be here. Maybe I'm just strange. Then I played Final Fantasy VII, and I saw this cute motherfucker add up to this scene. And this happened. So I went through puberty really goddamn quick. But once the pants feels calmed down, like 5 minutes ago, what was really important was it was the first time I played a game where I felt so completely seen and so completely included. It felt like someone at Square Enix or Squaresoft at the time had said, like, yeah, absolutely, there are, like, you know, teenage girls and queer boys and, like, all these people playing our games. We should make some characters that actually appeal to them. And that was really, really affirming and really what I needed at the time. And so here I am, still here, working in the industry, all thanks to this beautiful, beautiful, incredibly problematic man. The actual questions. I'm going to skip this one because I think we've talked a lot about what like traits we find attractive in a character. But I do want to ask, because there was definitely, shall we say, a common thread. So I'd like to ask the panelists, what do you think is in the water at BioWare and Square Enix to make so many appeal characters who appeal to people like us and people like the people in the room?
I'm sorry, it's great.
Oh goodness.
I mean, I think for at least for, you know, some of my orders, they actually have queer people writing their names, like, which is huge. Like, you can really tell when it's like, yeah, I'm a queer person, I know what's attractive to me, and it will probably be attractive to other people. And you just like write that and put it out there, and surprise, we really appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I think you know, you hear a lot of talk about the importance of inclusion and diversity and stuff like that, but I mean, you really see it in when there's representation of sexuality, which is something that is so personal. It's clear, especially, you know, knowing some people who work at BioWare and have worked at BioWare, that it's just a very welcoming environment, and that is reflected in the product. Like, you really see the value of making people feel included. They really take to heart nothing about us without us by having, you know, when they're telling a story about someone, they make sure they consult with members of that community. That's huge. It's huge.
I feel like also more, perhaps more cynically, you know, at the very least in the case of Square, they know who plays their games, and like the, you know, Hot Topic boy band that we got in Final Fantasy 15 is a very clear indication of that, because they're literally giving you just, what flavor do you want? This one, this one, this one? So, I mean, like, not to say that they don't care about representation, but I feel like them versus BioWare, you know, BioWare cares about money too, but I feel like with Square, it's a little bit more nakedly like, you want this one?
And building on Square specifically, I am not in any way an expert on like differences in masculine representation versus in Eastern versus Western culture, but I feel like from what I've seen from JRPGs and Japanese video games and like bands and other like cultural exports that are now coming over here more, there is like the sense of what like masculinity and fashion and masculinity specifically is in Japan, for example, is very different necessarily from like what the like U.S. standard of men's masculinity and fashion is.
I haven't seen any characters like Sephiroth except like David Bowie in Labyrinth. That's like literally the only character I've seen like that before.
Yeah, and I feel like there have been a lot of characters like Sephiroth since. Like,
yes.
Kuja's Thong, hello, like, Seymour's giant exposed. Like, I feel like every Final Fantasy has some guy just showing all the skin.
Yes.
Right, and I think part of that just comes from, like, a different sense of, like, self-expression and fashion that is allowed culturally in that area that isn't as much here. Because I feel like the masculine, like, fashion over here is so boring. There's just, it's basically jeans and a t-shirt, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I will add to that that, like, I have a deeply held theory that Square Enix has been trying to recapture the lightning in a bottle that they got with Sephiroth, and they've come close, but I feel like never quite nailed it for me, at least. But that's just me.
Did you go down?
Nope. Okay. All right. So we've been talking though about, like, you know, so BioWare and Square Enix is kind of, you know, companies that seem to actively want these characters to be sexy to us. So quick sort of yes or no. Do you feel with a lot of the other characters that when they were created, that you can imagine a group of people sitting in a room being like, we need to try and make these characters more appealing to women or queer audiences. How do we make them sexy? Like, you know, let's really try and push that thing. Do you get that sense that that is a common thing in the game industry?
No. I mean, it's funny because for every character you have on this slide, like, yes, but except for when I look at Ryu and Kratos, that's so clearly just like a bunch of dudes being like, how do we make this guy look really fucking cool? And then, like, I'm there. Like I feel like I've secretly snuck in and gotten my gay little hands on their muscles. And I'm like, ooh, like, you don't know that. You don't know that this appeals to me. And, like, I feel like I've stolen, like, something from under them. But,
Chuck Tingle response.
God. But yeah, I feel like, it's interesting because I definitely feel like it's been getting more towards that way lately. Like, people are actually taking time to consider, like, yeah, we want, like, this male character to, like, look appealing to women or whatever. And it's like, I'm just reaping the benefits anyway because I'm gay. So, like, cool, keep going. But, like, yeah.
Although, we'll push back on Hot Daddy Ryu.
Oh, no, you're right. Oh, yeah.
See, that's not... So, who here plays Street Fighter V?
Five.
Have you seen, like, hot ass bear daddy Ryu? I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just yelled
out. It's different.
That was my point. And now I've lost track of what I was saying. So yeah, for that would be my one exception. But also, D.Va is supposed to be what, a teenager, and she's a what?
She's 19.
Yeah, so a 19-year-old that broke back ass looking pose, I'm sorry, that is what people think is sexy, but anyone, because I'm just like, I want to get her back brace in a hot bath.
Well, like, building off of that, actually, specifically, like, with D.Va, I think part of why it took me forever to figure out my own queerness is so much of what we see of female characters is how straight men want to view women. And then I suddenly got into, like, media of, like, queer women showing how you can have a female gaze, which is a different thing, right? And, like, you know, Janelle Monáe was like, hey, I'm here, and here's what queer content looks like when it's meant for queer people. And I'm like, oh, this is what women pursuing after women looks like. So different.
So before I come to this side of the table as well, I actually want to specifically call out what you said there about gaze. So how many of you are familiar with the concept of gaze? Well, in that case, I don't need to explain it at all. Here, have a funny slide. So yeah, now, as you all know, it's basically kind of like what the game, you know, it's what the game wants you to find attractive or what it thinks its target audience will find attractive and what it's doing to highlight that. And the problem comes when they make assumptions of who their target audience is and they completely forget about their other audiences and who they find attractive. And I even have an example here. Look at Witcher 2. Look at Triss with all her buddiness and frontness and the camera panning up and down. And then look at Geralt, who's just like, he's an attractive guy, but the camera's just like the other side of the room. It's just like, we don't want to be here. Can we be away from this naked man? Compared to Witcher 3, where it's like, okay, they understand more gazes are in play. So expanding on the earlier question, I guess my addition to my question is, what does sort of the gaze of other players and other, like, diverse gazes look like? Like, what are the hallmarks for you guys? I'll start over here.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think you really hit on something important with the closeness of the camera and just, like, where it lingers and where the game's interest is. And it will just, you know, in these shots here, like what it gives you an opportunity to look at, like that slow butt swagger is, you know, not an accident. Nothing that happens in games is not at least regarded by the developers, and whether it's an accident or not, generally you can assume like something like that is intentional. So, yeah, I think in terms of like what are the hallmarks? I think when something is just exposed and presented, like it's I don't know, like a strutting peacock or something, or that weird bird from the National Geographic special does the hopping back and forth. when it looks like the game is about to show us a mating dance, I think that's when you know somebody in the company was like, "Hey, maybe we could make this character kind of sexy." But also, I'm totally down. Like, I think I prefer when players are able to infiltrate the game and say, "Oh no, this thing that you never meant us to be into, well now I'm into it. It's mine now."
I mean, I think the same thing. I think also the way they're presented to you really matters as well. Like, usually, you know, especially if you're playing like dating sims, the dateable characters are really, really obvious right off the bat because, you know, they're often much prettier, or they're just presented to you very kind of dramatically, or, you know, extra romantically, or sparklingly, however you want to do that. But also, like, I feel like when they allow you to have control of the camera, I appreciate that, because then you can create your own gaze. So like in the opening of Final Fantasy 15, you can absolutely zoom in on Gladio's butt when they're pushing the car, if you prefer. Or you can just, you know, keep it a little bit cleaner than that.
I just want to do that. Any thoughts over here?
I'm not sure, because I keep looking at this gif of Kate's ass.
It's very distracting.
No, it's actually boring to me.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, here. No, I get you. There's nothing appealing about like this closed ass. That's just it. There's no.
You know,
it does nothing for me.
If you're just looking at it as just a close up on an ass, it is really just devoid of context.
Right, and the same thing when like the camera lovingly pans over what's her name? Mass Effect. What's her name?
Right.
Yeah. You know, same thing. It's like, this is a serious moment. Why are we staring at her ass?
Yeah, she pours her deep, dark backstory to us. We have to stare at her butt.
I mean, it's a nice ass.
It is, but like, it's not in the right moment.
So I will also add, like, because I actually remember the context of the scene. This is when a romance chef, like, Caden decides to come back on the ship with a romance shepherd, and he's like, you know, I am, and then he turns away, and then it actually cuts over to Shepherd looking down and checking out his ass.
Oh, that's
while
good.
He's walking.
Yeah,
away.
Right. And then it, yeah. That comes back, and she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I also want to add that, like, so I feel like close cuts of, like, body parts we typically consider sexy are great, but, like, I feel like it really, I don't know, I come from romance writing with choices and stuff, and I feel like people really undersell the like subtle, like non-sexual voice. Oh! Like your teeth raking over your bottom lip, like cut to that, just like fine, my clothes are off, I'm good. Or just like a pan of like someone's like finger just grazing down someone's neck and clavicle, just like, I feel like when you treat each and every inch of someone's body in a moment that is designed to be sexual, anything can be sexual, and it can feel new and exciting because, like, we don't see that as much as we see people panning to butts. And, like, butts are great.
Yeah.
We can have lots of butts, but, like, I feel like it creates a sense of, like, wholeness in the sexuality when you consider the rest of the body beyond just, you know, the bits.
All right. Well, thank you so much for weighing in on this debate about butts. I'm keeping an eye on the time, so I'm gonna have to skip like one or two questions, so just come and ask me about these later. But I would like to touch briefly on fandom, because fandom is definitely a place that A, has a lot of marginalized people as part of the community, a lot of women, a lot of queer people, and it is also ridiculously fucking thirsty. It's lots of porn and of fan art and fan fiction. And I'd love to know what you guys sort of think about, you know, the creation of these communities. Like, what does that tell us, you know, potentially about either these characters or maybe about the game industry in general? Like, what are your thoughts about that? Well, firstly, how many of here have either drawn fan art or written fanfic? Yeah.
It's okay.
So you know, we're we understand this thing. But share your thoughts.
You know, I'm really excited by the eagerness of fans to take something up and make it their own and twist it and remix it and combine properties and redesign. You know, I have Hubert in my list of like alluring characters, and in the game, there are no like same-sex romance options for him. So canonically, not a queer character, but in my headcanon, he sure is. And that means, as far as I'm concerned, that means that he is, because canonicity is purely a capitalist invention. It does not actually exist. So if you want a character to be what you think they are, they are.
For me, it's actually how I met a lot of people on this panel. True. And I have no shame in admitting that I've written over 2 million words of fanfic. But I think, you know, in terms of why people do fan art, they do fanfic, they do cosplays, because games unto themselves are a limited sandbox, and that one character will be either identified with, that minor character can love to know their backstory. It allows us to fill in the blanks that a limited media cannot give us. So that for me, that's why I do a lot of fanfic or a different take on things, an AU, what have you, where I can kind of run with this and it's not hurting anyone if I go write an AU, like a coffee shop AU or something like that. It's me getting to have fun. It also has helped me as a writer.
My like most embarrassing moment of my entire life was when one of my dear friends showed Mike Laidlaw and Patrick Weeks my Dragon Age fanfiction, where Solas did some really bad stuff to the Rift on the Inquisitor's hand.
Oh,
oh yeah. This got to the point between Mike and I where he made me a custom t-shirt based on my Rift job and thing. So I want people to know that there is no shame, ever, because if I can still be in this industry while having had that happen to me, you are fine.
I'll wear that t-shirt to
how dare you.
I shouldn't, I'm so sorry. But I don't know, I personally, I write stuff like that because I don't really want to see it in the game. Like, no, I don't want to see that scene in like, wretched CG, like playing out with your models smashing against each other. Like, no, give it to me, leave it to my head, I'll do this for myself. And like, you don't need to do that. And it's, I love reading fan fiction and seeing people's takes on that, because it's like I love just seeing what like queer people find hot and extrapolate from these games that are maybe not necessarily meant like with us in mind. But it's a really cool way to just make stuff your own, and it's like really flattering also as a creator to get people who care about something you made enough to want to like spend the time and energy like writing something about it. Even if they're like trying to fix what you did, you still care enough. Like, that's great.
I'll keep it very quick, Michelle. Yes, but a really valuable thing I feel like with fanfic and fan art is also representation still really sucks. Where we are kind of with games. And I came specifically from like the reader fic side of Final Fantasy XV fandom. So basically that means that it's not just a story about, you know, somebody's original character. It's like somebody's telling you a story specifically about you and your favorite. So there's sort of an empowerment there for a lot of people. And it lets you, like, you could not only write like narrative wrongs, but like now you can have people with different body types and, you know, hair textures and skin color and that kind of thing that you don't often see, so.
So, keeping it really quick, but interesting sort of side note to this, that you touched on a bit with the human Kirby thing, and that is, in terms of like Twitter and fandom, there is a trend, shall we say, of taking like sort of non-sexy characters, quote unquote, and making them sexy, quote unquote. So for example, Human Kirby or Bowsette, I don't know who remember the Bowsette shenanigans. And of course the recent one is Rehydrated Ganondorf.
Yes!
Speak to me a little bit about this, guys.
This reminds me a lot of the, I don't know, the adoption of the Babadook a few years ago. where it was, you know, completely not the intent of the author. It's never even occurred to them, I assume. But it was just a community decision of like, hey, we like this. And what started as a joke was very quickly became very sincere because there was something to it. So again, I like it as sort of like a collective action, basically, of the proletariat deciding.
This is now sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you mean the proletariat? I feel like for me there's a lot of fun and challenge in trying to make a character attractive sometimes that is not, at least through writing. I think artwork is a little bit easier sometimes because you can just pose Ganon that way and make him extra muscly and shiny, but you know, there have been characters, I shouldn't admit this, but I wrote fanfics about a character that was in a movie for like 5 minutes, but I ended up making people like him enough to where they were adopting like this completely invented personality and like catchphrases and things like that. So there's a lot of value in like creative exercise there as well.
Awesome. So I'm gonna skip over the next question because as I said, I want to try and get through everything while we're here. it was just something about like, what about Twitter? But that's just, yeah. So instead, I'd like to make sure we have the time for like the last kind of like uplifting giant questions. Like, why is all of this important? Like, is this important? Do you like, is, why is it, why have we just all spent an hour talking about, you know, these characters? Why is it important for, I guess, the industry and for people to know about this stuff? Or why is it important to you?
Because we're all a bunch of,
we're all a bunch of thirsty assholes.
Well,
and also, you know, showing what we like, you know, will be the industry ideas of not keep giving us people like they have a broken spine and titties bigger than their head, which is appealing to some people, I'm sure, but having a lot of titty myself, that is not appealing to me at all.
I think there is a lot of power in what our media chooses to represent and what it chooses not to represent. And often when something is omitted from representation in mainstream media, like it basically sends this little message of because we haven't shown it, it doesn't matter, right? And that's a lot of why people get mad with like queer baiting in Disney films where, you know, queer people maybe hold hands for a second. They're like, look, we put a, you know, queer couple in here. It's like, no, you didn't. You like hit them in the background and you put them there for show, but like real tangible, like everyone's desires are important because desire and sexuality, everyone has some kind of a relationship with it, even if you don't like it at all. Like it's important in some way to the human experience, and when only one type of human's experience is represented, everybody else is, you know, betrayed by it.
Why it's important, and like one is just a general feeling of sex positivity. I identify as sex positive, feeling like there needs to be more positive acknowledgement that it's okay to have desire and it's okay to like find people sexy and it's okay to kind of every now and again be like, and as you kind of noted that like it's can be so one-sided in a lot of games, and which brings me to my second thing that like, yes, I feel representation is important. It's absolutely important. But there is more, like, in terms of myself, I want to see people like me in games, but I also want to see people that I'm attracted to in games because that is a part of me and who I am because I'm a thirsty girl and I got needs. and not saying the games have to fulfill the needs, but it's acknowledging that, you know, just because I'm a woman who plays games, I'm not sexless, I'm not, you know, disinterested, I'm not the other, it's just, yeah, no, here's a hot shirtless guy, have fun. All right, quick next question, what are some current frustrations? And I actually just want to quickly explain that picture on the right. That was when, what's it, final, oh, time? Oh no, we have to ask it away. Sorry?
Yeah, you can go. you do the, next question.
Okay. So next question. I won't bother then to explain that picture. What would everybody, else like to share with their frustrations?
I hate when, people form like consider this an issue that like, oh, so you want to take sex away from like, you know, straight men or whatever. It's like, no, I just want to get some for me too. Like I literally do not care like about, you know, taking away dead or alive from boys. Like, it's fine. Please have your fun. I just also want like a dude with bouncing pecs and dead or alive. And I think that's valid. Like, it's fine. I'm not, so yeah, I guess that's what like frustrates me a lot is when people frame it as like, oh, you want to take away this thing, when I'm like, no, I want to add more for everybody. I just want everyone to be able to be horny. It's fine.
I want, you know, black women to actually be romanceful in games. For a bi character to be bi and happy and not have turned into a joke amongst player base. Imagine one day.
Liam?
I don't know if mine is necessarily just about sex, but I feel like people in the industry generally, and maybe kind of beyond that, just have a problem with like sincere romance or admitting that they enjoy it, so they have to hide behind gimmicks like you're dating a pigeon or you're dating a sword, and that's no disrespect to those games because they're wonderful games, but I feel like people feel like they're not allowed to admit that they like those things without something funny or goofy to hide behind.
Right, and I'll probably just call it here and I'll add mine as an uplifting note, and that is my current frustration is that like there are people in this industry, many people who are in this room, who are not getting the awesome sexy characters and awesome sex appeal and like equal representation, equal, you know, fan service that they deserve. And it is my great hope, and I hope everybody else's hope, that we will go forward and there will be more of that in video games.
Woo!
Q&A, unless I assume they're rejecting us immediately with extreme prejudice. So, I'm sure you can come up and chat with us. Thank you so much for coming at this ridiculously late hour. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you, my mother.